Welcome to Everyday Strong, the podcast that teaches parents, teachers, and other caring adults how their everyday, loving actions can help their teens cope with anxiety and depression. And now, here's our host, United Way of Utah County's Program Director, Michael Ann Gardner.
Hi, everyone. It's Michael Ann. I'm here today with one of the most amazing school administrators I have ever met. Her name is Rhonda Bromley, and she has had a long career as a teacher, a principal of Lone Peak High School, an assistant superintendent, and now she works as the executive director of the Utah Association of Secondary School Principals. It's her time specifically as a principal of Lone Peak High School that I wanted to talk to her about today. The question that I have primarily is, how can school principals and other administrators create a school environment where all kids feel safe, connected, and confident? Thank you for being here today, Rhonda.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I want to hear first, when you think back on your time as a principal, what was your favorite part?
I loved, Michael Ann, as you know, I loved being a high school principal. Mm-hmm. And high school is that time in a student's life that is, it's such a fun time, but it's such a hard. So you have the best of times and the worst of times all happening at the same time, you know, while you're in high school. And I loved just being with the kids through all of that. I loved helping them work through hard things. I mean, there's hard things that happen, you know, with kids. And I love just seeing them accomplish things and being able to, like I said, work through those hard things. And I mean, we're really spoiled at the high school level. There are fantastic teachers, administrators, all through K through 12. And we're spoiled because we get to be there for the culmination of the K through 12 experience. Mm-hmm. And we get to go through graduation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, those last few years where it's that last final push and they're really making decisions of, you know, am I going to go on to college? Am I going to join the military? Am I going to jump right into the workforce? Am I going to get married right out of school? It's a really important time. It's that kind of fork in the road of, okay, now what? Now where am I going from here? And our job is just to make sure they're ready wherever they're going to go, whatever direction they go. We want to make sure that they're feeling confident and they're ready and they're prepared to do that. So I love working with the kids and especially working through the hard things and watching them accomplish. I love watching them perform after they've worked so hard getting ready for a musical or after they've practiced so hard with some athletic event. I love that. Or, you know, the academic side of things when they finally passed a class they've been having a hard time with. Or, I mean, I just love watching them succeed and accomplish. And sometimes it's a pretty rough road getting there.
Yeah. You know, the way that you're talking about this or the way you're sort of describing your experience, it reminds me of something I heard the other day that our job is to savor people, not save them. And I think what that meant to me is just like really just enjoy who they are, where they're at, like lean into that whole experience of being with them and not try to fix problems for them. And that's what I hear you saying and I've experienced from you is that you're so good at just like whatever is on your plate, I'm just here for you for that. And we're just going to do this together. And that's what I hear you saying.
Yes. And I love that quote that you just said, because truly we have the ability to see things through adult eyes. I mean, like you just said, I've been in this profession for over 30 years. Perspective on things is very different. And we need to understand that it's a very different perspective than a 15-year-old or a 16-year-old. Or, you know, or even younger than that. And we just have to understand that they don't see things the way we do. Things might just seem so logical to us and things that just make sense to us. And yet through those teenage eyes, they're very, very different. Or things through a teenager's eyes are the biggest deal. And through our adult eyes, we're going, that's not that big a deal. But you know what? It is to them. And we need to understand that. And we need to help them through that. Because guess what? It was to us when we were their age, even though it's not to us now. We're older.
So. Yeah. I think almost every teenager I talk to just wants to be taken seriously. That's like what I always hear from them. And there's something really empowering when we don't just try to downplay whatever their very real experiences are.
Yeah, absolutely. They want to be heard. They want to be seen and validated, you know, validated for the feelings that they have and the person that they are at that time.
Yeah. And this actually leads me really naturally into the next question I wanted to ask, which is more about emotional health specifically. You've illustrated really well some of the natural ups and downs of academics and so forth, but specifically at like Lone Peak, were there any unique emotional health challenges that you had to help them deal with?
Yes. Lone Peak's a fantastic school in a great community and certainly had unique challenges, really just like every school does and every community does. And one of the things that as a principal, I really stressed with my faculty, my counselors, parents, students, as we all tried to work together, had to do with just that idea of resiliency and helping the students learn how to get through hard things, learn how to work through things. And that can be challenging. And like we talked about a minute ago, in their minds, the biggest thing to them might be, I didn't get asked to homecoming. And again, in our minds, we're like, oh, you're fine. You're going to be better for it. You're going to, you know, no, in their minds, like that's the biggest thing to them right now. So how can, what are the things, the tools that we can give them to help them work through that hard challenge that they're going through? And it can be, and it happens to everyone. There's not a student that doesn't go through challenges, varying degrees and different challenges. And so that tool is so important. I talked a few minutes ago about just wanting to make sure these kids are prepared as they leave high school for whatever they're going to do. And you know what? No matter what road they take, they need to know how to be resilient. They need to know how to get through hard things. They're going to apply for a job someday and not get it. They're going to lose a loved one someday, and they need to be able to have those tools that they can work through those hard things. And that was something that, you know, we had some challenges at Lone Peak. And, you know, I talked to a lot of people about how do we do this? This Lone Peak's an area where there's a lot of success. And sometimes students get to high school and they've never failed anything. They've never not been the best at something and that's a hard thing when you're used to being able to, you know, pass everything or work hard and get that starting position and when that doesn't happen, again, it needs to be okay. You need to be able to work through that and be okay and be stronger for whatever it is that you went through. So I found that was one of our challenges. I think teenagers in general right now, and even younger, not just teenagers, but even younger, the things that they're going through because of social media, something that we didn't live through as a lot of older adults, some younger adults did live through that and can understand that. But, you know, that idea of I'm on camera all the time, kind of a feeling of, and I'm comparing myself to everyone else constantly because of what I'm seeing on social media. That has gone to such an extreme compared to what it used to be. And that's hard on kids when they think they're the only one sitting home on a Friday night. And they're not, but social media would have you think that they are. And so just the challenges of maybe setting a higher standard than is realistic and kids just trying to live up to that unrealistic expectation that they see on social media with others. We all know that people post some unrealistic things sometimes on social media and we want to look like we've got it all and that's not realistic. And yet when teenagers look at that, they think, oh, I'm the only one that's experiencing this. And in reality, no, you're not. And so we need to be able to talk about it. I loved just having the conversations and being able to say, guys, everyone's going through something and we need to be able to be open and honest and be able to talk about it. And that's not unique to the area that I was a principal in. That's what everybody's going through in all communities. We need to be open and we need to be able to talk about it.
I agree 100%. I mean, I resonate so much with what you're saying, thinking back even on my own teenagehood, childhood, whatever. You know, I mean, I think about like, I really felt like the golden child for a long time until I graduated high school and I, you know, moved out of the country and I had to hit the, you know, hit real life. And I realized like, wow, like I'm not actually good at everything and everybody doesn't like me all the time. Mm-hmm. And that was probably, I mean, it was psychologically much more difficult for me than I had expected it to be. And I think about this thing we say often in Everyday Strong that we need to help kids feel safe to fail. And I think sometimes people don't like that we word it that way because they're like, no, like the failure still isn't good, whatever. But personally, I want to stick with safe to fail because I think if I had had more situations where not only had people communicated to me sort of in an abstract way that like, yeah, theoretically, it's okay to like not always be perfect. If I had actually experienced failure in a safe at home environment and had adults help me process that, I would have been so much more equipped for the real world.
Yeah, I agree. And I think as adults, whether we're talking about teachers, administrators, parents, I know personally as a parent, it's hard to do that. It's hard to watch your kids struggle. You want to take that away from them. You want them to not hurt and you want to take that away from them and fix it for them. And we need to realize as adults how important it is not to do that. Not to take that away, but help them through it. Help them work through it. Because again, this is what life is. We're going to experience these kinds of things. And there's not always going to be someone that's going to be able to swoop in and just fix it for you. You've got to learn how to just, you know, deal with that. I love that you brought up that idea of safety because again, not just safe to fail, but the feeling of safe to be who you are.
Yeah.
Safe to be who you are and what you believe or what you look like or what, you know, just that feeling of safety. I think it's challenging to any student when they feel like they're different than everyone else. And although that's not the way that it was in the school that I was in, it felt that way. It felt like everyone here looks the same. Everyone here is the same religion. Everybody here speaks the same language, which that was almost true. We didn't have very many students at all that English was their second language students. And so when you're feeling like, oh, I'm the only one that is different, which they're not, but when it feels that way, there's got to be a sense of safety that, you know what, it's okay that you speak a different language. It's okay that you look different. It's okay that you belong to a different religion. They're just that feeling of safety to be who you are. You know, gender identity is something that over the last few years has become more and more prevalent in our schools. And our students need to feel safe to be who they are. And I think that's one of the, you know, we talk about safety and that emotional safety and safe to fail, but the feeling of just being safe with who I am.
Yeah.
No matter what I look like, no matter what I believe, there's a feeling of safety here.
I think that brings up a great point too, is that sometimes we say, you know, insert X thing is a failure when really it's just a difference. Like, you know, I'm coming to terms more the older I get that I'm just introverted. Friday night, I like to be at home, like with a book and like some snacks, right? And you were saying that kids sometimes feel like, you know, I should be out there having this amazing Friday night or whatever. And might feel like a failure because they're not doing that thing that everyone else is doing, but that's not a failure. That's just a difference in helping kids understand, you know, you can just be you.
Absolutely. Again, this, that feeling of safe to be who you are, no matter what that means. And that's one of the challenges I think that we as adults, whether it's in school, whether it's in our homes, in the community, what are we doing to help these kids feel safe emotionally? Yeah. Now, I think the physical safety is talked about a lot just because of things that happened and, you know, but I think that emotional safety, we need to talk about that more. That needs to be more of a priority and more of something that we're focusing on.
Yeah. So that actually, let's get a little more concrete here. So, you know, you are both an amazing parent and you worked with kids directly. when you're interacting with a kid, like, and let's not even speaking broadly, but like in that moment, right, you've got, let's maybe even say you've got a kid who's come to you and something has gone wrong. They're in your office because there's like a discipline problem, or just there's some reason why they need to be interacting with you one-on-one. What have you done in that moment to help them feel safe?
Well, I think it's so important that, first of all, it's something as simple as knowing who they are is so important. Something as simple as just knowing them by name is huge to students. When you can see them, whether it's in the hall or out in the community, and you know them by name, that makes a difference. And you can look them in the eye. And it's magical when a student can just look you back in the eye and talk to you and have a conversation. And I think that's the best thing any of us as adults can do. We need to have more one-on-one with our kids, with our students, no matter what age, and truly look them in the eye and listen to them. Listen to them. What are they confused about? What are they frustrated with? What do they like to do? What are their interests? And really, really listen. And they know if you're listening. They know if you're multitasking in your brain or if you're not really focused on them. So truly look at them and really listen to them, I think, is magical. And it can help so much down the road when they have someone they need to turn to, or they're feeling you're going to be one of those people that they have learned to trust. Or like you said, when there are some challenges that they're going through, it's going to be so much easier to work through that together if you've already established that relationship with that student, whether it's your own child or whether it's a student at school. If you have that relationship with them and you truly know who they are, it'll help you understand why are they doing what they're doing, rather than just, this is just somebody that I'm seeing for the first time and all I know about them is whatever they did wrong. If you truly know them and you already have that trusting relationship, you can work through anything together.
I think a lot about something that you said to me once, that you had, you know, you've had kids where they won't make eye contact, they don't want to engage, but you were just persistent, and it could take a long time, but eventually they would come around and they would connect.
Yes, you just said that and it just gave me chills, because it just it just makes me remember, like, when a student that is struggling, and you've got to just be persistent. You just keep talking to them and keep, and then when that finally happens and they'll finally look at you and make, it's like, it's magical. Cause you're like, okay, we've accomplished something here. We're taking some steps in the right direction. It's an awesome feeling.
So I'm curious, actually, you know, I had a college professor once, it was one professor out of all the classes that I took, but he had this thing where the very first day of class, he went around, had everyone say their name once, and then he went back around and repeated. He could say everyone's name, like, right on the spot. And I still don't to this day know how he did it, but I have never felt so connected to a professor, like you said, as when it was evident that he was paying such close attention. How did you, I mean, you had lots of students. Any tricks about how you did that?
You know what? I love that your professor could do that. I wish that it was that easy for me. I had to really work at it. It comes easier, I think, for some people, but I really worked at it. I would literally study. We have picture books at the school and yearbooks and in the computer, you know, when you pull up a student's name, their picture comes up with it. And I really would study those. And, you know, remind myself, I live in the community that I was a principal in. And some people are like, oh, you never want to do that. You know what? I loved doing that because I see my students everywhere. And so I can connect with them at the grocery store or at the gas station, or, you know, and it helps. And then when you see them at school, you can say, hey, are you still working there? Or, you know, you've connected with them in their life, not just at school. And that makes a huge difference. But yeah, you're right. I had, you know, over 2,600 students, and I did, I want to know every single one of them, but it was hard. I truly just wanted to know each one of them. And luckily, I wasn't a one-man show at the school, just like no people is at their school. We've got amazing faculty members and counselors and secretaries and custodians. And, you know, you think about it, if all 2,600 of those students had at least one adult at the school that they sincerely trusted and connected with, can you imagine what a difference that would make?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Hope would be it's more than one, but if it's at least one, yeah. And it could be a coach or a teacher. Like I said, sometimes it's the custodian or the media center aide or the secretary, or, you know, I mean, all of us want to think, okay, I'm going to connect with all 2,600 students. Mm-hmm. And as much as I tried to do that, I'm so grateful that even though, you know, I got to where I knew all their names and all their, I was grateful that there was an English teacher or a counselor that, you know, that was able to go a little deeper than sometimes I was able to go with every single student. And it truly takes everybody working together, and not just in school. I mean, can you imagine if students feel connected at school, but then once they leave school, then they don't connect with anyone? I mean, you've heard me talk so much about how important it is that we're working together with the whole community, because it might be their manager at work that they connect with, or their coach of their city league team, or their music teacher, or a religious leader that they have. But can you imagine if everywhere our kids went, at home, at school, out in the community, they were feeling a connection with somebody? I mean, that would be unbelievable. And I think we're doing better, but I think we've got some work to do, all of us in that area, to help with that connection.
Yeah. Well, and you know, what's remarkable, right, is that this feels, and I've mentioned this on other podcast episodes, but this feels kind of warm and fuzzy, you know, like just, you know, we'll just love people and then they'll be healthy or whatever. But this is actually very evidence-based. You know, some of the latest and best research shows that the number one factor in a child's resilience is the presence of at least one caring adult. And it doesn't have to be the parent. And sometimes it might even be, you know, like you said, more effective if you kind of diversify those relationships, if you have a variety of relationships. And that really is the thing to being resilient and overcoming trauma.
Absolutely, it is. And the beauty about this, Michael Ann, is that over the last several years, we're recognizing that and we're talking about it. You know, it hasn't been that long ago that it was something that it just came natural to some people, but not everybody. And the fact that we're actually educating adults how to do that is making a huge difference, more than just with educators. You know, parents, I'm speaking as a parent right now, to learn some strategies and things. You know, I've got six kids and they are all very different. And the thing that'll work with this kid doesn't work with this one. And so you have to learn, and you have to learn from each other. I mean, we have to work together, and we just have to learn from each other. And we're becoming better because we're talking about it more. It's not one of those undiscussables. It's something that we're being more open about. We're talking about it.
Yeah. I did want to go back for a second. You were mentioning about how important you've always felt like it is to involve the community and so on and so forth. Was there anything specific that you did when you were a principal, like to reach out to the community and engage them?
Yes. I have, like I said, I have an amazing community, just like I know, you know, all the communities in Utah and in the, you know, in the country are, but I live here. And so I know this community, and I recognized that I needed help. And I recognized that my faculty needed help. You know, I have teachers at the school that have gone to school to become a math teacher, not necessarily a crisis response counselor or things like that. And I never want to imply that adults should take on the role of a psychologist or a counselor or a social worker. We're not all trained to do those kinds of things. But what we all can do as adults is connect with the kids and provide that feeling of safety for those kids. And so I reached out. My community has an ecclesiastical religious presence in the community. And, you know, sometimes people say, oh, no, church and state, you can't mix those two. And my feeling was, I have to, absolutely. I need help. I need help. So I reached out to the mayors of the three communities that fed into my high school. And they were absolutely on board. They said, absolutely, what can we do? This is the thing, Michael Ann, is when it comes to this kind of stuff, nobody says no. I didn't have one person, not one community leader, not one ecclesiastical leader, not one politician, not one person said no. People want to help. They just don't know what to do. They don't know what to do. So we were able to organize ourselves into what we called the Lone Peak Community for Hope, where I included all of the feeder schools, including all the charter schools and private schools in our area, all of the ecclesiastical leaders, not just from one religion, but from all the religions that we knew of that were being practiced in our area, all of the religious leaders, parent groups, business leaders, and came together because, like I said, the challenge that we were having was not a Lone Peak High School challenge. It was a challenge in our entire community. So we had to work together. And once people learned and realized, you know what, there's just some really simple things you can do to connect kids. Like, this isn't a major, everyone's got to go back to school and learn how to do all this. There are just some simple things that if we're all doing that, it will make a difference for the entire community. And we're talking kids, you know, young and old. This wasn't just teenagers. This is kids starting as early as kindergarten and beyond. I mean, this is an area, Michael Ann, that I know we're talking about students and kids, but even us as adults, we need it as well. Well, it's benefiting all of us. We need connection. And we learned that more than ever when we lost the ability to connect during the pandemic. When we were all quarantined, I don't think any of us realized how much we need connection until we didn't have it anymore. And so it, you know, that's kind of helped people realize, okay, this is more important than ever. Our kids are not going to be able to be successful if they don't feel safe. And if they don't feel connected, they're not going to be able to be successful. And so we have to work together as a community. And I was truly grateful, Michael Ann, that our community was so open and so willing to jump on board and to be a part of it. I've got some fantastic people and it's still going strong in our community. Mm-hmm. We've got some great community leaders and business leaders and school leaders and church leaders, and it's still going strong. So I'm really, really grateful for that everybody was willing to help out.
Yeah. Yeah. I like what you said, right? About how I think sometimes people just need to know what to do. They just need to be kind of be given a direction, because I think, you know, mental health can feel and emotional health can feel so overwhelming, right? It's just like, you know, these things are happening inside these kids and there's nothing I can do. And I think it's one reason actually why I really love the Everyday Strong approach is because, you know, it's not our job to like fix teenagers, to fix people, but we're also not helpless. You know, when we meet needs, like you said, it's almost like connection is like a universal human need or something, right? Like, as we teach in Everyday Strong, and that when we do our part to meet those needs, then kids will thrive, and we can trust that. We can trust that like our actions will make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree. And like I said, the more we can just be open, I know you've done such a good job, Michael Ann, just talking about this, but the more we can just be open about mental health issues, it's got to be something that we talk about, and not just when there's a crisis.
Right.
So we had some situations happen in our community where it felt like it was crisis time, and you get hundreds of people that want to be involved. And then when there's not a crisis, well, those same 100 people still need to be involved. This can't just be something that we're focusing on during a crisis.
Yeah. Well, I think that actually leads me into one of the other final questions I wanted to ask, which is, you know, it sounds like a lot of work, first of all. So major props to you for being willing to work so hard. I'm just so inspired by that. But also, like, just to play devil's advocate a little bit, what would you say to someone who would say that, like, you know, a school's main job is just to focus on academics and you're like, it's not in your lane to think about emotional health? How would you respond to that argument?
Well, I absolutely disagree with that. And again, my experience at, 31 years as an educator, my experience also as a parent and as a mother, and also as a student that grew up in the system, if you have something going on in your life that is emotionally challenging, think of us as adults, Michael Ann. If I had something, if my house burned down yesterday, and I show up at school and it's like, hey, go teach math now. You need to go focus on teaching math. Who can do that? Who has that ability? Our kids are not going to be able to learn academically like they need to if they are dealing with some of these emotional things. It's just not going to be able to happen to the extent that we want it to happen. Now, yeah, for years, maybe this things weren't talked about and weren't dealt with. And students were still learning. I was learning, but things have changed. And the standard is much higher than it used to be about what we expect of students. And it's a good thing. We expect a lot of them. But in order for them to be in a place emotionally and physically to truly be able to learn, those things have to be addressed. And like I said, we can't expect everyone to be the psychologist and the social worker. But what I love is that schools have service providers now, teams of service providers that partner with parents. Like that has to be the key. Mm-hmm. The parents absolutely are the ones that are in charge of the kids and their education and their emotional mental health and all that. We partner with parents, but there is help available for these kids to be able to help with those emotional things so that then they can focus in class, and then they can be successful academically. And like you said a minute ago, there is so much research that shows that for anyone to say that, I think maybe that the biggest concern and question is whose role is it to address it? Mm-hmm. I don't think people are going, oh no, this doesn't need to be addressed. I think sometimes people feel like, well, is it really the school's responsibility? Mm-hmm. And again, I would come back with, in partnership with parents, the social worker is not going to be working with the student unless the parent's okay with that or the counselor or things like that. But if we're working as a team, I love that there are service providers available at all of our schools now that can help these kids deal with those things so that they can then academically be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. Love it. So well said. Okay, let's summarize everything. Let's do a rapid fire. Thinking about principals and advice to principals, what's one thing that a principal could do to help a student feel safe?
Well, I think that like what we talked about before, I think that feeling of acceptance, no matter what, that they are accepted, that they are loved, no matter what they believe, no matter, what they look like, no matter what clothes they're wearing, no matter those kinds of things. Now, in saying that, obviously, there are some times when things are inappropriate or they're against the rules and things, and certainly those things need to be addressed. But again, if you've got a trusting relationship already built with that student, you can work through those things together. That's not hard to work through some of those challenges together as long as you've got that feeling of trust and that feeling of safety. So I would just say accept and love, unconditional love for the kids. Mm-hmm. So important.
Yeah. And that's a lot of, I think, like sort of internal mental work for you to really, I think you can't just say the words, I accept you. You have to really feel it in your heart. And sometimes that takes a lot to work through if the child is, particularly quote unquote difficult or just different than us.
Absolutely. It does take work, but you know what? Nothing will bond you more with someone than when you're going through something hard together. And if you approach it that way, that look, we're doing this together. We're going through this together. It's not you're going through it and here I am. It's no, we are doing this together. And it's truly nothing will bond anybody more than when you're working through something really hard together.
I love that. Okay. What about connection? What's a really good way to connect with students?
Again, just like your professor in college connected with you, I think learning not just their names, but learning, knowing who they are, knowing about them, you know, who are they as a person? What are their likes? What are they involved in at school? What are they good at? What don't they like? And that's not one of those things that you can just say, hey, fill this card out and give it to me and I'm just going to look at it. That's a great way to start, but it's something that you just build on. I know I say that knowing that a lot of teachers start the school year by saying, hey, fill out this questionnaire. I used to do it myself, but there's no way I could learn all of that about all of my students just by looking at a questionnaire. It's something that's a process. You're learning more and more about the students as you go. But I think initially, just learning their names, making eye contact with them. And then as time goes on, the more you can learn about them, the better, the more you're going to connect.
Yeah, that's lovely. Okay, and then final one, to build a student's skills or feeling of competence, what's the way to do that?
Well, I think so many of these things are intertwined because I'm going to go back to, again, that feeling of acceptance. It, you know, if you're accepting them and you're commenting and complimenting them on different things about themselves, that's going to help their confidence. Acknowledging even the littlest things, the littlest accomplishments. You know, you might be working with a student that's tardy every single day, and maybe 1 week they're on time one day. And you're going to acknowledge that. You're going to be like, awesome. Great job on that. Okay, what did you do to take next week? Let's see if we can make it twice. Let's see what we can do. You know, I mean, just acknowledging even the littlest accomplishments and things is just going to help build their confidence. We're all that way. When someone notices something that you've been working on, if somebody's trying really hard to lose weight and somebody says to them, hey, you look like you, all of a sudden your confidence goes, and then you want to work harder. And you want to even do it better. The kids are no different than us. So if we can acknowledge things and recognize even the smallest accomplishments that they have and talk to them about it, that's going to help their confidence and it's going to help them work harder.
Yeah. I think in Everyday Strong language, we call this build confidence by expressing confidence, which is kind of a way of like not trying to solve their problems for them, but just saying like, yeah, like you said, with like the being on time to school thing, like, I trust that you can figure this out. I'm here to help you, but I also know that you can do it if you just, you know, want to bring your own skills and abilities to it.
Right. Absolutely.
Rhonda, thank you so much for your time. This was a very enlightening conversation. I love talking to you.
Oh, thank you, Michael. And we appreciate so much what you do. You work so hard behind the scenes and you're helping us. Like I said, you're part of the team that is helping us with these kids. It takes all of us working together and we're lucky to have you. So thank you for all that you do.
Oh, thank you.
If this episode resonated with you, you can check out our free resilience handbooks and online learning at www.everydaystrong.org. These tools tell you exactly what you can do to help the kids in your life feel safe, connected, and confident. You can choose to create a relationship with your children that will help them to learn to be resilient, regardless of the challenges life throws their way.